We're going to start with Mr. Plevin, Rod Gardner, who's going to talk us through where we are with particular financial claims and areas of practice that you could be looking at. Rod, take it away.
Thank you. They say the trouble with solicitors, it's on the one hand, or it's on, but on the other hand. They also say old solicitors never die, they simply lose their appeal. Mm-hmm. Well, there's an exception here because the other week the Court of Appeal delivered judgment on the motor finance case known as Wrench or Hopcroft versus First Round. And of course, that was, well, you probably don't know, but I've been running a training consultancy since I left private practice the last few years, and I'm the architect of that judgment in that I trained the law firms that brought the claims, supplied them with a training manual, claims particulars, skeleton arguments, and the rest. We're in a very complicated arena in that in order to handle consumer claims or financial claims, and it goes beyond consumers, as you'll hear shortly, one doesn't just need to know the FCA handbook rules, guidance and principles. You need to know the Consumer Credit Act, and perhaps more pertinently for the judgment I've just referred to, one needs to understand the equitable relief when there is an ad hoc fiduciary duty, and separately, running alongside, which is why it's so complex, the disinterested duty, which I'll explain when I get to the case shortly. In all the areas we're talking about, it's my experience, we are taking proceedings usually against financial institutions, consumer lenders, and retail banks. And there will be, on my part, some criticism, but I want to make it clear because this conference, there are lawyers who represent the defendants. There are some lawyers here that, on the delegate list, their firm represented the losing respondents on two of the cases before the Court of Appeal. I have no criticism for the lawyers. The lawyers are always, as one might expect, the lawyers for the banks and consumer lenders are amongst the finest in the land. They are usually august practices, backed up by the best counsel in the land as well. So my only criticism is not of them, because they all act most professionally and they also are polite, and they are, from the point of view of me being a litigant until a few years ago, easy to deal with in that respect, even though there's a great polarity. The one constant throughout when one looks at consumer claims is that there's always an element of failure to disclose earnings or commissions. And I know in relation to motor finance, which I'm going to deal with in a few minutes, many of you will have a question which says, we can understand why the motor dealer earns his profit on the sale of the car, but when he advances the credit, which is the only way in which the car buyer, for most purposes, can proceed to buy the car and arrange his finance, why does he have to account for his earnings on arranging the finance? Because after all, there's work to do, credit checks, paperwork, and such like. And I will answer that in due course. The first time I got involved was with PPI, and as we all know here, payment protection insurance was the biggest financial scandal in terms of the harm done to consumers. And between 1990 and 2010, 64 million policies were sold. And by the end date, plus a couple of years for the pipeline to be worked through of the complaint scheme that was introduced, something in the region of £45 to £50 billion was paid out. That doesn't take into account the extra billions that the banks would have to pay for their own administration staff, working matters out, etc. So that cost one bank that had 50% of the market, namely the Lloyds Banking Group, about half. They have paid out, according to their own accounts, 20-odd billion. And that's gone quite quiet now. Where I came in was that you had to show that the policy of insurance was missold in accordance with the FCA handbook. And at least 25% of policies were not missold. So when I got involved in 2008 for Mrs. Plevin, personally, I worked out that there was a route to relief by availing, in large measure, it's not the only part, the Consumer Credit Act, which was new at the time. It was only brought in by way of amendments of the old Consumer Credit Act in 2008. And what I saw was the unfair relationship provisions, which we know as Section 148C of the Act. And the problem I found was that counsel at the time said, why are you saying that the relationship's unfair? And I said, well, because having read the hundreds of pages of the PPI final report issued by the FCA, then the SA, I can see that huge amounts of commission were earned and were not disclosed. And the commissions were so high, I said at the time, I think there's unfairness in a relationship. But of course, nobody knew what unfairness was. Nobody knew how to judge it. So I ended up settling my own particulars of claim. And the particulars that were before the court on Plevin, which was one of my first cases, they weren't the best pleaded. Counsel would have done it much better, but none of them were prepared to do that. Happily, moving on, I've done so many of my own claims particulars for the purposes of my training consultancy that I'm quite good now. But even so, Plevin succeeded on one ground principally, because however much complexity, everything does reduce in the end, and it's my job here, giving you a brief overview, to try and make you understand what I wish to impart. And in Plevin, Lord Sumption, with whom the other judges agreed, said this: there was an extreme inequality of knowledge and understanding between the creditor and the borrower in relation to the payment protection. The amount of commission, which was secret, and its extent, which in Plevin was 71 point something percent of the premium, was given to the lender by way of commission from the PPI insurer. And that was what happened across the board. And what the judge said was, when the commission is so high, there's bound to be an unfairness in the relationship, and he remitted the matter to the county court to award damages as they saw fit, and Mrs. Plevin got all her commission back. Although, of course, since then, we always used to claim not just the commission, but the whole PPI premium based on unfairness, and hardly anything ever went to trial after that. They mostly settled. And, of course, there's still something left within PPI even now, but generally speaking, until the judgment the other week, PPI had had its day and people had been remediated by the complaint scheme, and the FCA, of course, following the Plevin judgment, as many of you will know, introduced a second bite of the cherry for people whose policy was not missold, and they allowed an extra claim which was based upon the excess commission over 50% of the premium. What that means is, if the PPI premiums could have been a single premium, it could have been 5 years at so much a month, if the premiums aggregated to £10,000 and the lender disclosed that 75% of that £10,000 was rebated to it by way of commission, £2,500 would be payable plus interest at 8%. And that scheme remediated, apparently, according to financial journalists, it cost the lending industry in aggregate about £2 billion extra. I was still in practice then, and I didn't like that. I said, no, I don't want the excess over 50%. Why should the first 50% go free? So I started issuing for the whole of the PPI premiums back, less the payment made by the FCA, and until very recently, that went swimmingly well, and the whole industry, there's probably now 80, 100 firms that have taken on Plevin claims where there's been some step two redress. However, the case of Self v Santander, which was only this year, it was a Court of Appeal decision because lenders were loath to try and challenge, because many of the lenders paying out the step two redress, the excess over 50% of the, by which the commission exceeded 50% of the premium, they didn't want to challenge another case, a High Court case, which held that even if a full and final settlement is signed, we, on behalf of the claimants, would argue, but you had to pay that. There's no consideration because you were ordered to obey the rules of the FCA, and your receipt in full and final cuts no mustard. And that was never tested until recently. And the banks carried on paying out. Now, because of self, the Court of Appeal said, no, if a claim is compromised, then although the court has a jurisdiction because of a previous High Court decision to ignore the settlement for the purposes of reopening the credit agreement under the Consumer Credit Act, they said in these cases we wouldn't exercise that discretion and those people can't make any further claims. Of course, there are still huge numbers of people who didn't sign because the banks only adopted this process partway through paying out the step two redress, and they can still claim. My next involvement came out of a PPI case, of Mr. and Mrs. Matt William, and I noticed that Mr. and Mrs. Matt William had used a broker to arrange the loan, and in addition, the Matt Williams had paid a fee to that broker. And looking up the law, I could see that in 2007, Herstanger v. Wilson suggested that, at the very least, where a broker acts for the borrower in performing a service, namely obtaining a loan on reasonably competitive terms, then they're not acting on their own behalf only. They're acting on their own behalf because they're going to get a loan commission, but they're also performing a service on behalf of the customer. And this is the first burning question, you know, why do motor finance dealers, why can't they keep the profit on the motor vehicle, which they can, plus the earnings or profit or commission on the PPI, because you're doing something by way of a service, which is we call a fiduciary duty comes in, you're agent for that person because that person's actually paid you a fee. Now, I didn't understand at the time, Herstanger & Wilson is 2007, why aren't there thousands or tens of thousands of claims where there's a broker and a borrower and a loan, whether it be a secured loan or a personal loan? It seems to me strange. And the reason that there wasn't any explosion of claims is because of the skill of defendant lawyers. They came up, and counsel, they came up with a defence which every county court judge said, yeah, that's right. The notion was this, the submission, it's not a notion, it's a submission. The submission was the county court would normally be bound by a Court of Appeal decision, as would the High Court, as would the Court of Appeal itself in relation to later decisions. But what happened in Herstanger was that the parties agreed between them that there was an agency relationship in place, namely that the broker acted on behalf of the borrower. And if there's an agency in place, it's not difficult to then go forward and say that agency connotes a fiduciary duty to obtain the fully informed consent of the borrower to the payment of commission. And if the fully informed consent's not there, there's a breach of the fiduciary duty because it's a secret commission. Now, at the time, Matt William, like lots of other cases, lost before the county court. In those days, you could go straight to the Court of Appeal. Now you sometimes have to go via the High Court. But we went straight to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal took into account that in Herstanger v. Wilson, Lord Justice Tuckey noted that it was agreed that a reference to commission being paid was known to the buyer. He'd read it or he understood it. And he said, where there is an acknowledgement or some evidence that the borrower knows that commission may or will be paid, it negates full secrecy. It's still a breach of fiduciary duty because you haven't got the fully informed consent, which would mean the existence of the commission, the amount of commission, or how it's calculated, which you never get, still don't today. Okay, and that notion of halfway house or half-secret commission, that meant that although the court could, in its discretion, award rescission, they didn't think it was appropriate in that case, and they awarded an account of commission only. So I now say, even on Herstanger v. Wilson, the halfway house meant that Mr. and Mrs. Matt William should have won at first instance, but the argument that was successful was, well, we don't accept what was accepted in Herstanger, that there was an agency relationship in place. And the county court agreed. We went to the Court of Appeal, who said rather differently. He said, look, this is exactly the same as Herstanger. They weren't impressed with the no agency. We, the broker, solely act for the lender. And in the case of Matt William, the broker was FSA registered, or FCA probably at the time, FSA at the time, yes, not FCA now, the regulator, as a non-advised broker, an execution-only broker. And they still said, look, first of all, there's been a payment of a broker fee. If you pay a fee to someone, he must be contractually your agent because his job is to find you a loan. We'd already had the PPI back separately, by the way. So Matt William and Norton said, we're following Herstanger and Wilson. They didn't think there was any point in the in connection with no agency because they said, even without payment of a broker fee, it was implicit in the judgment as I read it, there is a duty by the broker to avoid a conflict of interest. And that conflict is that when placing the finance, he might well want to place it with a lender that pays him the most commission, whilst his duty, according to the broker's own website, find you the most competitive loan, was to find that loan for the borrower, and it might not necessarily those two aims meet. And the way to get around that, the way to stop all these claims, is quite simple. It's happened in the business energy sector. From 2022, October, I think, most businesses use brokers to get their gas, electricity, etc., and water, presumably. And now, all brokers orally disclose, before the signing off of the agreement, that this contract with, say, British Gas is one where my firm, not me, because I'm only the salesman, this firm will earn £10,000, and it's also in writing. And the reason I think that lenders have allowed the present situation to perpetuate is, A, their lawyers have done much better than the few claimant lawyers that have been involved. There's been no explosion of claims. They've always have the sympathy of the court much more than the claimant does at the county court level, where most cases go no further. So it still surprises me that after Matt William, which said you can't run this argument anymore, why has there not been an avalanche of cases? Well, there have been some, but the financial effect overall on banks has been tepid, I would say, because there's a few firms now that do bring claims for secret commissions. Okay. I set up a training consultancy after leaving private practice a few years back, and I would prepare a training manual replete with claims particulars, letters before action, skeleton arguments for trial, narrative of submissions on allocations because of the small track, fast track arguments that often raised issues before the court. And in 2021, it's mistaken, it says here, 2021, it's not there. 2021, the case of Wood v. Commercial First came before the Court of Appeal. And that was a case where Mrs. Wood, and her case was conjoined with a case by Mrs. Pengelly. Mrs. Wood was a wealthy woman because she owned a farming business with lots of land. But she was cash poor, and she went to a broker who arranged a series of loans, three loans in total, about £1.8 million, with a lender that's no longer going called Commercial First. They went and became insolvent. And Mrs. Wood used the broker, got the loan, and fell into default. The lender brought possession proceedings, and the lawyers for Mrs. Wood were adroit enough to put in a defence to say there's been a breach of fiduciary duty here because the broker never disclosed the commissions, never took the fully informed percent of how much commissions, which by the way totaled £90,000 in that case, and that defence was accepted by the High Court at first instance. It didn't go to the County Court because of the value, and the judge held that the wording on the loan agreement talking about the possibility of commission being paid and other wording, which I won't go into as it's too complex, the bottom line was they said this is a fully secret case. Mrs. Wood, as long as she can provide counter restitution, which I'll come back to, is entitled to win her defence on the grounds that she can elect rescission of the loan agreement. Now, rescission means simply this, and it's not 100% accurate, but it's about 99% accurate. If you get rescission, you can elect one of two things. You can say, I only want the commission that was not fully disclosed to me paying to me with interest. And there will be reasons why some people will only go for that. Most people, though, particularly with regard to motor finance, will say, no, I want rescission. On rescission, you always get the accounts of commission. They call it money had and received in the judgment, but that's just legalese for the commission that's been secretly paid. You get back as well, effectively, all interest and charges. So the reason why rescission is, which is a common law remedy, not an equitable one, although you can use equity if you need to, the reason why rescission is so punitive is that the lender only gets back his loan. Now, Mrs. Wood was still substantially behind because there was still a huge capital payment, but the judge said, providing within X months, you can refinance, pay back the original loan only to the lender. He then has to pay you back all interest and charges to date, including default charges, etc., plus an account of the £90,000. When I read that, and this is 2021, and why I say I have some criticism of the way banks work, that to me made it so obvious that in the motor finance industry, where we already knew by 2021 that there was a market investigation, there was no announcement at that time about a complaint scheme, but we knew that the regulator was most concerned with what he calls DCAs, discretionary commission arrangements. What they were, they applied in about 50 to 75% of all car finance loans. You, the buyer, would not know this. The arrangements, known as discretionary commission arrangements or DCAs, gave the lender gave the broker permission, by way of a discretion exercise, to hike the interest rate within a bracket. So if the lender said, I'm prepared to lend this customer at 5%, but if you pay 10%, I'll pay you more commission. Usually about 80% of the extra interest would go to the car dealer. Now, the regulator quite rightly saw this as being totally unjustified, because under even FCA principles, you're supposed to manage conflicts of interest, of which there's a great one here. You must act in the interest of the client at all times, etc. There was no rule, still isn't a rule, that says you have to disclose the commission in full. And this happened with Plevin. There was a case that a colleague firm who saw what I was doing with Plevin, he took a case to court and said, Harrison and Blackhurst, he said, 87.5% of the premium in this case, 87.5%, is commission not disclosed and paid to the lender, who of course charges interest on the whole loan for the premium. And both the High Court and the Court of Appeal said, it's eye-watering, this commission, but there's no breach of the FCA or FSA rules then, and they dismissed the claim. It then came to me to take to the Supreme Court with Mrs. Plevin's case, and the Black Horse case settled day before the hearing, and Mrs. Pleven's case is now history, and I've mentioned it already. But it still surprises me that after Pleven, after Hurstanger, after Matt William, that banks have not altered their processes. And one can only deduce from that that consumer lenders in particular are just so frightened that if the person who's buying the car sees that there's another 1,000 or two in commission being paid to the car dealer, that he might look elsewhere. Well, he might, but in business energy claims, and I know someone who's a very substantial business energy consultant, and she handles very large amounts of business, she loses one case a year out of, you know, many, many dozens where the broker says, sorry, where the client says, look, you've told me that it's British Gas who are the cheapest. You've told me your firm's going to earn 10 grand. I'm going to save that 10 grand. I'm going to go to them direct. Well, that's one of the consequences, I'm afraid. And it doesn't matter whether some or none or hardly any at all would want to withdraw and do their own internet search or go to another broker, purely independent broker, to arrange their finance. So the skill, and I put it down to the skill, of defendant lawyers against claimant lawyers has been such that until now, with this Hopcraft case, there is no avalanche of claims. But this particular case involved three people. One, Mr. Johnson, who was represented by a firm I didn't trade, and they accepted before the High Court on appeal, because they lost at the County Court, that the client was notified of the fact of commission. So looking at the fiduciary element, it means a Hurstanger relief, the amount of commission only, no rescission. The other two were cases taken very ably by a law firm that I trained. And in the case of Mr. Wrench, before the present law firm, another law firm I trained, had difficulties in following my template particulars of claim. So Wrench actually came to me, can you settle the particulars of claim? And Wrench probably went to court, because I couldn't say exactly that was the final one, but Wrench went to court, fully pleaded, and a lot of the pleadings in that case are included in the judgment. And getting to the judgment now, because I realise I'm using the time up quite quickly, what the court was considering was there are two ways to obtain relief since the Wood v Commercial First case. Because in Wood v Commercial First, the Lord Justice Richards, who was then the Court of Appeal judge, he now sits in the Supreme Court. So I'm saying when, if there's an appeal, if it gets granted, he's probably going to hear it. He said there are two ways to relief. There's a breach of fiduciary duty, and there's a disinterested duty advice. This is a common law remedy which Lord Justice Richards spelt out several cases going back to 1873 saying when there is bribery involved, because someone who owes you a duty of kinds puts himself or herself into a position of conflict, you must be told the full circumstances, the fully informed consent, meaning you have to be told the amount of commission and the fact of commission, and if there's any kind of discretionary element where the interest rate can be hiked, you need to be told all of those features. When I read that, I thought, and he also said, he didn't want fiduciary claims to be brought before the court because they involve what he said is an elaborate consideration of the relationship between the borrower and the broker and the lender. He said, this rule is much more simple. It's been going for hundreds of years, and he basically reformulated it and gave the disinterested advice duty, to which there can be no halfway house, because that is something which is a creature with no precedent of L.J. Tuckey in the Hurstanger case. And when we talk about the surprise that the lenders are all voicing, we didn't think this would ever be, we always thought we were safe and all the rest of it, I just say, look at the history of the law in this case. And, you know, they're now going to be paying the price. Permission to the Supreme Court can only be granted if there's a point of law. There isn't a point of law, but there is a tension between Hurstanger and Commercial Credit. Wood and Commercial first, sorry. And that tension is because this halfway house applies in relation to, if the evidence is there, the person being alerted to the fact of commission or the possibility even of commission being paid. But there is no such thing, and they said that. There's no way that we can extend the law into the disinterested duty to have the same effect. So you can get different results. So there is a case that's been accepted by the Supreme Court of Appeal on both Wood and on both the latest case of Wrench and Hopcroft. And that is this, that the fact that halfway house does not arise within the disinterested duty. If you do, as the pleading in Wrench was, just the disinterested duty, it doesn't matter if they show that there's a halfway house that you knew or should have known or it was brought to your attention, because this common law rule is inflexible. And they said, we can't extend the law. This is a common law principle going back 200 years. Now, that's obviously a conflict because there's a case of Medstead, who was represented. He was part of a suite of very wealthy people buying securities in the millions of pounds. A broker was used, and Medstead and they decided, sometime later, probably because the investments went down, perhaps not, they decided to sue on the grounds of breach of fiduciary duty. And what the court said was, yes, there is a fiduciary duty owed, but when someone's financially sophisticated, as they were in the case of Medstead, that duty does not extend to saying more than, we will get a commission because you're not paying us anything, which they did agree they'd done. And the court said, there's no relief. But what I say is, and why there's a conflict, if they'd have brought the case on disinterested duty, they would have succeeded because there is no concept of either halfway house nor whether the sophistication of the borrower needs to be brought into play. So, I've done my best here to explain the differences between the two judgments that have some conflict between them, and I hope I've given you some understanding in a very complex area of where we now are. The lenders are very upset, as you can imagine. Some of them have stopped lending, and what they've done in the week or two since they stopped lending is they've changed their procedures to something that is perfectly correct. They now disclose. They tell the brokers they must disclose orally and in writing. What about the Court of Appeal? Well, appeal to the Supreme Court. There are only 12 judges of the Supreme Court. When they sit as a quorum, they have to have five. So, of necessity, there are only a few dozen cases a year that are actually heard. And the Supreme Court is quite strict because it would have to see that there is some point of law. And what the judge in Hopcroft and Wrench said was, we don't need to resolve this because we were quite satisfied that under the fiduciary rule, no secrecy was negated at all, except in the case of Mr. Johnson. And they even said there, had Mr. Johnson not conceded that he knew about the commission, he would have got, they more or less say that, he would have got rescission as well. Rescission means the court grants the appeal, there is full secrecy. Full secrecy means at the election of the claimant in this case, or the claimant, you can go back to the county court and now say, I want rescission of my contract, which means I want an account of the commission, I want all interest and charges back. If the Supreme Court do grant permission, I think it will be on that very narrow point, and I don't mind putting my neck out here. I think that they'll say that the halfway house was wrongly formulated, in which case there'll be complete uniformity between the disinterested duty and the ad hoc fiduciary duty. How will the FCA frame its complaint scheme? Well, the short answer is I don't know. But looking back at PPI, once the Plevin judgment by the Supreme Court was issued in November 14, the regulator carried out what it always has to do, a market investigation, a consultation, responses, etc. So by 2017, nearly 3 years later, August 2017, it brought in this step two rule saying, as we've got to follow the law, anybody who didn't get their money back because they weren't missold and fall within the scope, the legal scope of Plevin, because there were certain dates that you had to have the loan agreement open by, they can have the excess commission. So the complaint scheme, as framed now, has always been on the discretionary commission extra interest charged, and I'm sure that the regulator won't want to make everyone wait 1, 2, or 3 years until it considers whether to amplify or improve its scheme. What it does mean, this decision, is that those firms, and there's not that many, and it won't hurt the banks that much straight away because of this, those firms that have the training and understand how to plead these cases properly, and some of them have thousands and thousands of, and tens of thousands of clients, if you like, in the bank, they're going to bring individualised claims and they're going to do rather well. The complaint scheme, in my view, may well go ahead as it stands by next December, and they'll tell us in May, but they'll probably announce that they're going to consider whether there needs to be any further relief beyond those DCA car buyers in relation to the extra interest charged. So what you do is you take the interest actually charged, you take the lowest rate within the bracket that was acceptable to the lender, the difference between those two amounts, which they've calculated during the period of their market investigation, it was a 2013-16 period, they said that £1,100 was the extra interest on average. Add the 8%, because they always add 8%, we've got several years of 8%, you're going to come to £1,500, £1,600. So claims companies that can't issue but can deal with complaints, you can say you'll get your 30% on that, and that's how you can do your sums.
We need to finish.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to finish now. I have put on the last page where this may go on to. And just to pick one example, this is not a consumer claim. This goes further. Two things. One, you're not stuck with the 2021 date because the banks never changed anything after 2021 January, save that they didn't enter any discretionary arrangements with brokers. So 2021, right up to date now. Secondly, Metro Bank's a good example of a non-consumer. They are a bank, challenger bank, with a huge base, a huge amount out, £1 billion or more, on asset finance, and they admit discretionary commissions were in place. So I leave you now because I think I've slightly gone over my time, and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Rod.